It's Friday, April 7th.
Today's WBFO brief was recorded at around 8:30 in the morning. This is WBFO News. Here's Jay Moran.
After a month of midwinter testing, the Niagara Frontier Transportation Authority removed 10 electric-powered buses off the road in mid-March. That came after the manufacturer New Flyer issued a voluntary recall of buses using an energy storage system battery assembly. The NFTA says their electric buses showed no problems that might have serviced during the cold weather. The NFTA hopes to have them back in service in 6 to 8 weeks. The Buffalo Museum of Science is looking for a new leader. The Buffalo Society of Natural Sciences, which oversees the museum's operations and those of Tift Nature Preserve, has announced that its president and CEO, Marissa Wigglesworth, is resigning to become CEO of the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Museum in Colorado Springs. Deputy Director Kathy Leacock will take over as interim CEO as a national search for a permanent replacement is organized. Wigglesworth was the head of the society for nearly 7 years, and under her tenure, the museum reopened the Kellogg Observatory, secured funding to build an accessible trail at Tift Nature Preserve, and began renovations of the museum's north facade. And charges have been filed against a 20-year-old accused of vandalizing Salvatore's Patriots and Heroes Park, the property established by restaurateur Russell Salvatore. Michael Stasiak of Lancaster was arraigned on a felony charge of criminal mischief and misdemeanor counts of criminal possession of stolen property and petty larceny. Cheektowaga police are asking for the public's help as they try to identify who shot and killed a 24-year-old man outside the 33 Speakeasy Grill on Genesee Street. During a Thursday press conference, officials expressed certainty that there are a number of witnesses who have yet to come forward with information on the February 22nd shooting death of D'Angelo Williams. Police have video footage that shows at least 20 people involved in a fight that led up to the shooting. While a number of witnesses have been interviewed, police say cooperation is waning. A 3-year federal grant of over $575,000 is being awarded to Damon University from the U.S. Department of Education through the Centers of Excellence for Veterans Student Success Program. In announcing the award, Congressman Brian Higgins noted that the money will provide critical support for Damon's student veteran population from enrollment to graduation. Damon is one of only 14 schools to share in the overall grant of nearly $8 million and is nationally recognized as a military-friendly academic institution with on-campus services provided through its University Center for Veterans. And the Holiday Valley Ski Resort in Ellicottville has shut down its skiing and snowboarding operations for the year. Officials noted on social media that an inch of rain at the site in recent days damaged the remaining snow surface beyond the point of patching it. The Facebook post said, quote, "That means last Monday was the last day of the season." Most people think of institutionalization as a thing of the past, but for New Yorkers with disabilities, the fear of being forced to live in a setting like a hospital or nursing home is real. WBFO's Emily Watkins explains how the state's proposed budget for disability services leaves self-advocates and their workers concerned for the future.
So similar to the living room, these are our 6 single bedrooms. As you walk by, you'll notice everybody picked out, you know, was able to pick out their wall color.
Julie Kolb, a registered nurse, takes me on a tour of the group home where she works. The residents are all people with disabilities who have the highest level of medical support needs and use a ventilator. Everywhere you turn, there's a personal touch, an item that reflects the personalities of the people who live here. The staff talk about a recent outing to see a play and family members who built a raised garden last spring.
Because they do get to have a traditional home environment and be able to go into the community, and I'm sure we'll get...
There was a time in the United States where homes like this didn't exist, and people with disabilities were institutionalized. While deinstitutionalization began in the 1960s, it wasn't until 1999 that the Supreme Court's Olmstead decision affirmed disabled people's right to live in the setting most integrated into their community, such as a group home like this one, rather than a hospital. However, spots in homes like this one are still hard to come by.
There's really no other place for individuals with the needs that these individuals have to live sometimes.
And people who have found placement in group homes or are given support workers to live independently face a fear of reinstitutionalization due to underfunding by the state of New York.
Yeah, when I had an aide that I was really close to, and she had to leave because she had children and she had to get more money to have childcare.
Christy Glenn and her colleague Israel Cruz both live with disabilities and work as advocacy support professionals. Glenn lives on her own and receives the help of a direct support professional, or DSP, but worries without the assistance, she would have to move into assisted living. Cruz wants to move out of his family's house, but is already struggling to find home care workers.
I'm concerned that one day if I choose to move independently, which I hope is coming down the pipe soon, I'm going to run into a situation like Christy has or many other people that I know that can't get aides to come in because they're not getting paid what they should be.
DSPs help people with disabilities with tasks of independent living, such as cooking, cleaning, getting dressed, and going out of their homes. According to New York Disability Advocates, 85% of people with intellectual or developmental disabilities in New York receive support through a nonprofit provider. However, just like state-run group homes, nonprofits rely on state funding to pay workers. Western New York has the lowest statewide average starting wage for DSPs at $15.84. Jordan Wallaber is the Associate Vice President for Residential at People Inc., who operates this group home.
We're competing with not only state entities, hospitals with similar fields of work, but with fast food.
Disability service providers are asking for an 8.5% cost of living increase this year for DSPs, something the Assembly and Senate appeared to support in their budget proposals, but the executive budget included at just 2.5%.
Yeah, actually in our house, I think we're losing two of our DSPs due to the pay.
Nyla Colon-Monte and Gilbert Rodriguez are both DSPs in the group home we visited.
We definitely had a few people who left for higher paying jobs.
Yeah, to do the same thing.
To do the same thing, yeah.
Nonprofits also compete with state-run group homes for workers, where DSPs are paid a starting wage of $23 upstate. Rodriguez makes $16 an hour full-time, and Colon-Monte, a college student, makes $15 an hour part-time.
I really genuinely care about them. I make sure, like, everything I do it with love and dignity. So I paint their toenails on my off time. I make sure that their hair is always looking good. I just really care about them. You know, you think if it's your family member in here.
Mm-hmm.
So I do everything with a lot of love.
But for Rodriguez, who wants to start a family with his wife, he's concerned that if the pay doesn't increase, he won't be able to keep doing this full time.
Again, I won't leave here for anything, but it definitely will be harder to do. I would have to do a second job.
In Western New York, the average DSP vacancy rate is 15.7%, and the turnover rate is 35.42%, the highest turnover rate in the state. With just days left in the budget extension, agencies, DSPs, and self-advocates fear they'll face another year of short staffing and turnover. Emily Watkins, WBFO News.
It's Holy Week, and it's marked by solemn observances, but also preparation for the celebration of Easter. For the monthly Faith Keeper series, Scott Sackett visits with the members of a local Mennonite church that's also celebrating its 100th anniversary this year.
It's an early spring morning, and the songbirds are claiming their territories around the croplands and pastures here between the hamlet of Clarence Center and the village of Akron. Sunlight is shimmering in the dewy air, and the sodden landscape is a palette of muddy and dull earth tones. But the snowdrops have bloomed, and the daffodils are beginning to show their colors. At the Clarence Center Akron Mennonite Church, the quilters are at work on their handcrafts. Sandy Myers is one of the members.
These quilts, these small tide quilts, are 60 by 80 normally. And they will go to our headquarters down near Lancaster. And then they are shipped to different countries. We actually have two or three that are yellow and blue that were made especially for Ukraine.
German-speaking Mennonite families from the Lancaster, Pennsylvania area began to settle both sides of the Niagara after the American Revolutionary War. A Mennonite congregation was established in Clarence Center in the 1820s, and a stone meeting house called the Good Mennonite Church was built. Several communities would form over the ensuing decades with other meeting houses that have also been lost to time. Then a new wave of Mennonite families began to arrive in the 1920s, and it was in 1923 that this congregation was founded.
We're saving this one for the, you know, we celebrate our 100 years, is it?
Yeah.
At one time, our ladies... Yeah, just kind of help me open it there. They embroidered a block and then put it together into a quilt. So we have some ladies that are still with us that have their blocks in here, but most everyone has gone to be with the Lord. So you can see how beautiful that is.
6 rows by 8. Each square features an embroidered state flower for each of the then 48 states, with the name of each quilter sewn in and framed in olive green, a symbol of peace and new life. Sandy says many in the church today come from traditional Mennonite families, but that she and others come from diverse backgrounds. Sandy and her husband had a 30-acre beef cattle and blueberry farm in Friendship, and they were long associated with the American Sunday School Union and the Wesleyans at Houghton College, where her husband worked and their boys earned their undergraduate degrees. Their eldest son is now the pastor at the Levant Wesleyan Church in Falconer. Their second eldest is a Wycliffe missionary who works in Indonesia. Their youngest is the pastor here at the Clarence Center Akron Mennonite Church. Dale Myers has been pastor here since the spring of 2009. Everyone calls him Pastor Dale, though he says the children like to call him PD. He says when he was 12 years old, he chose the path that led him here.
I believe God spoke to me in one of those ways as I was sitting around a campfire, and he presented me with a choice. It wasn't an audible voice that I heard, but it was the fire as we were sitting around the last fire at a church camp that we were at, and it was like, Dale, you can hold on to your anger and head towards a life of destruction like you've seen other people do, or you can forgive and follow me, and I'll show you the way.
Pastor Dale says his anger stemmed from the difficult upbringing his mother had endured. She and her 8 younger siblings had been abandoned by their father, and he says he hated his grandfather for that. He says his mother's life story has been a force on his pathway.
I think for me, what drew me to the Mennonite Church is the centrality of Christ's words, that Jesus not only provided us teaching and atonement, but he provided us an example to follow. So when he talks about forgiveness, that's a big deal. When Mennonites pray, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors, they take that very seriously. So there's that centrality, and so I think other things stem from that as far as turning the other cheek and the nonviolent resistance. Certainly peace and justice, blessed are the peacemakers. The peace and justice are, I would say, are distinctively Mennonite.
Among the various Mennonite groups, Pastor Dale explains there is a spectrum of observances, and some communities reject the use of modern technology. Pastor Dale's church is fully in sync. All his services are online, and those at home participate remotely. It's a Sunday morning, just after dawn. The Good Cemetery here on Griner Road in Clarence is near the site of the original Mennonite meeting house. Less than a mile away is the signature Pennsylvania German-style barn from the 1830s of a Mennonite bishop who led the first congregation. I'm standing at his grave marker. On Easter morning, Pastor Myers will lead a sunrise service here in the cemetery, including a responsive reading based on the scriptures, the songs Lo in the Grave and Christ Who Left His Home in Glory, some silent reflection, and a closing prayer.
For me, the resurrection is the key time of the year for Father of Jesus, from my perspective. To me, it's like a new year. It's a chance to reorient to the foundation of what we celebrate. I think it's a great place to start your Resurrection Sunday morning. Usually the cemetery is a place of tears and goodbyes, but we never have to say goodbye to Jesus.
For Theater Talk on WBFO, I'm Anthony Chase.
And I'm Peter Hall.
And tell me about Thurgood.
Well, it's up at the Irish Classical, one-man show in that theater, the Round Space. Very effective, with a wonderful actor named Brian Marble, who's been putting this show on all across the country.
And he portrays Thurgood Marshall.
He does.
First African-American member of the United States Supreme Court.
And he talks about his path there and all of the times he was sort of slapped down. His big break came when Lyndon Johnson wanted to demonstrate his commitment to equal rights and tapped him for a federal position. And that's a pretty funny story, if anyone goes. He does a great imitation of LBJ, who was kind of a crude fellow.
But I think in the current theatrical climate, an interest in Thurgood Marshall, and this is down at the Irish Classical Theatre Company, is right in keeping what's happening in the American theater in general. I was unable to be at the opening. I was out of town this weekend, down in New York. It's interesting to see the production of New York, New York, that'll be opening soon. The character that Liza Minnelli played, well, it's based on that, but she's an African-American jazz singer. And the Some Like It Hot, which I did see, the second Broadway musical based on the Billy Wilder film about two men who have to cross-dress to escape the mob. Now, just imagine with a contemporary spin what happens there with current issues of gender identity. But also, one of them is African-American in this version, which adds a whole new twist to it. This really is, what's the word, the zeitgeist. This is what's happening now. The funniest thing I saw was a play by the first Native American playwright on Broadway that we know of, Letitia Fasthorse, who has written a play called The Thanksgiving Play. Now, already this tickles your funny bone, Native American woman writing The Thanksgiving Play. The comedy is driven by the fact that there are no Native Americans in it. This is a group of white people. One who is hired specifically because the director believes her to be Native American, which she's not. Her agent told her to get headshots done in six different ethnicities, which is how she got Jasmine at Disneyland. All of her cultural references are Disney references. She's not what they were looking for. And did I mention the play is being done for an elementary school? Well, they are so woke that they can't get out of their own way, and it is hilarious. That's the Thanksgiving play. But the arts always reflect what's happening in culture, in politics, and so on. And that's where we are now.
Now, is it a full-length, two-act play?
No, it is the most divine creature in the American theater. It is 90 minutes, no intermission.
Ah. Well, I've noticed that's still incredibly popular. I know it was a good thing during the pandemic, because where are you going to go during intermission? You can't go in the lobby and mingle, so get the audience in, get them out, and everybody's happy. Do you think that the two-act play is going to make a comeback? Or are we all going to look forward to more 90 minutes?
Well, do you know something? The intermission provides the opportunity to sell merch.
Ah, that's why all the musicals have an intermission.
Indeed. Yes, all of that merch, which is showbiz for merchandise, for those who don't know. Yeah, and I see as I arrive back in town that Shays made the big announcement for what's coming into Shays Buffalo for next season. And many people are surprised. I think you and I are not surprised, because we just look at what was on Broadway last season and, okay, that's what's going to go out on tour this season. But it's really revved up because we lost some time to the pandemic when nothing was opening on Broadway. And so now we've got some fun stuff.
Including another musical derived from a movie, Mrs. Doubtfire, but it's going to Tech in Buffalo.
You know, I enjoyed that musical a lot. I thought it could have had a longer life, and it didn't. So I'm happy that it's going out on the road. I think that will give a great deal of pleasure to many, many people.
I know friends of mine were asking about Girl from the North Country. It's a jukebox musical, let's face it, with songs by Bob Dylan.
Well, I don't know. You don't hear Dylan on many jukeboxes, but I get your point. The big splashy one, Moulin Rouge. How long is it going to take them to load that baby in? That's a big show.
The sets, the costumes.
Yeah.
It'll be great. And looking forward to the final one in the series, MJ, the musical, all about Michael Jackson, because the book is by Lynn Nottage. Folks who want to know a little bit more about Lynn Nottage will want to know that her play Sweat is coming to Road Less Traveled right here in Buffalo this month. So
wonderful, Lynn Nottage. Yeah, I'm happy to be able to see that on tour as well. And then, of course, every few years, it is time for a whole new generation of little kids to see Annie, which is a wonderful musical. And they've popped that in. You'll be able to pick up Annie if you are so inclined. For Theater Talk on WBFO,
I'm Peter Hall.
And I'm Anthony Chase.
Don't forget to like or subscribe so you can help others find this podcast. And if you love it, leave a review too. The WBFO Brief Podcast and the award-winning journalism of WBFO's news team are made possible by our members. Thank you for listening.